This is Squawk Pod. I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on our podcast, President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump have tested positive for the coronavirus just days after the president downplayed concerns about masks and large rallies at his first debate against Joe Biden.
So far, we have had no problem whatsoever. We do them outside. We have tremendous crowds. When needed, I wear masks.
Okay.
I don't wear masks like him. He shows up with the biggest mask I've ever seen.
And only 32 days before the presidential election, Dr. Scott Gottlieb, former FDA commissioner.
There's every reason now to expect that the president will do well and recover. We're all wishing him well, but the risk is still high.
And Jim Cramer joins Joe, Andrew, and Melissa to break down today's jobs report and what these positive COVID diagnoses might mean for stimulus negotiations, the Supreme Court makeup, and your portfolio.
I'm not saying this much to do about nothing. I am saying that people should have a buy list ready.
It's Friday, October 2nd, 2020. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Good morning and welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. I'm Andrew Ross Sorkin along with Joe Kernan and Melissa Lee. Becky is off today. We have some breaking news this morning. Just hours ago, President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump testing positive for the coronavirus. The president tweeting just before 1 a.m. that he and the First Lady will begin their quarantine and recovery process immediately. We're going to have a lot more on the next steps for the White House and testing others who may have been exposed from Dr. Scott Gottlieb. But before we do that, I want to get straight to Eamon Javers in Washington, who has been working this story all night and has the latest for us. Eamon.
This news began to unfold last night with a report that Hope Hicks, one of the president's closest aides on his campaign, had tested positive for the coronavirus. Then there was a period of time where we did not know what the president's status was. But Hope Hicks is obviously a close personal contact with the president on a regular basis. And in fact, she's been in close personal contact with a number of senior administration officials over the past week, traveling with him out to venues and to the presidential debate. Take a look at this list that NBC News has put together of all of the people inside the White House who have been in contact with Hope Hicks just this week on this travel. More than 20 officials here who've been seen with Hope Hicks, not necessarily always wearing a mask, touching some of the same handles as they go up the stairs to Air Force One, obviously on the plane, moving around. All of those people will now have to be contact traced and tested. And you can imagine the scale of the effort that is unfolding inside the White House this morning as they try to figure out who has been exposed, who has COVID, and where this is all going to land. Meanwhile, the president defending himself earlier in the week, you remember that debate on Tuesday, the president was asked about his decision to continue holding large in-person rallies. A lot of these rallies where the people in attendance did not wear masks. The president said he simply had to continue on the campaign trail. Here's that moment.
In any case, why are you holding the big rallies? Why you not? You go first, sir.
Because people want to hear what I have to say. Well, so far, we have had no problem whatsoever. It's outside. That's a big difference, according to the experts. And we do them outside. We have tremendous crowds, as you see. I mean, and literally on 24 hours notice. And Joe does the circles and has three people someplace.
Okay. And now we're getting international reaction rolling in, guys, as well. Take a look at this tweet. This is from Hu Xijin. He is the editor of Global Times in China and viewed as somebody who is very close with the Chinese government in Beijing and often tweets reflections of their views on the world. He is tweeting this morning, President Trump and the First Lady have paid the price for his gamble to play down the COVID-19. The news shows the severity of the U.S.'s pandemic situation. It will impose a negative impact on the image of Trump and the U.S. and may also negatively affect his reelection. So many unanswered questions here, guys, in terms of the campaign, the stimulus, the battle for the Supreme Court, all of those ongoing right now. Clearly, campaigning activities will not be able to continue on the president's side as normal for some weeks now. No word yet from the Biden campaign about what their plans are. In terms of the stimulus, it's sort of an unknown at this point how this will affect those negotiations, which are ongoing as we speak. And then in terms of the Supreme Court, it's likely that Congress will still continue to push forward, but everybody involved in that process will also have to be contact traced and tested as well to make sure that anyone who has come in contact with the president over the past week, including Amy Coney Barrett herself, the president's nominee for the Supreme Court, gets a negative test before moving forward, guys. So a lot of moving parts this morning.
Eamon, before you go, let's just walk through the contact tracing and what the circle might look like in terms of who has been in contact with the president. Obviously, the Biden campaign, given the debate, you mentioned the Supreme Court nominee. How big a circle are we talking about here?
Well, it's been a limited circle in recent months. They have made efforts to keep the president out of contact with as many people as possible, but it's still, you know, dozens of people who come in contact with the president on a regular basis. And, you know, there's 100 people or more flying on Air Force One at any given time, including all the staff, aides, military folks, and everybody else involved in that process. And we've seen the president on Air Force One a couple of times just this week. And Hope Hicks, we know, was on Air Force One without a mask this week as well. So there's a large number of people. I would imagine there are hundreds of people here who are going to be implicated. There's a lot of detail here to be gone through, and you can imagine health officials, the Secret Service, Capitol Police, and a whole range of other authorities in Washington are scrambling aggressively this morning to figure out what the damage is and to contain it as best as possible.
I would imagine there's some well wishes from a lot of leaders around the world at this point. I thought that was an interesting one. Eamon, just from the perspective of China and how they feel about the upcoming election, and that's the CCP's take, which is also interesting given their right. initial, you know, what we now know was done in terms of transparency and letting the WHO in and letting the United States in and the way the virus did, you know, come from that part of the world and everything else. That's an interesting take from the CCP and propaganda from China on that, but it sounds like almost sounded like gloating. That wasn't a great quote, I don't think there. Right?
Yeah, look, it's clearly blame game, right? I mean, the Chinese government quite
the
resentful of the president's use
the
of the term.
The president and first lady, he deserved it from, I mean, that's rich. That's like CCP propaganda.
Look, the president's been calling this the China virus for months now, and there's resentment in Beijing over that, and there's resentment in the United States for the way the president feels the Chinese handled this in the first place. So the two sides have been sort of staring eyeball to eyeball across the Pacific Ocean on this issue for months now, and it's going to continue to be ugly. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, okay. All right, Eamon, thanks for reaction. Let's bring in, thankfully, which this is great, Dr. Scott Gottlieb, former FDA commissioner, CNBC contributor, board member of Pfizer and Illumina. And doctor, put on your clinician hat. You have practiced. Well, let me start with, 74 years old, he may be a little bit overweight, yet the numbers are still on his side with no comorbidities. What have we seen for COVID-19? Kind of clinical about it, but what are his risk factors at this point in terms of percentages?
Well, thanks for having me. We wish the president and Melania
obviously,
well,
yes,
just
definitely.
Top of the hour, you know, top of the message, and Hope Hicks and the other White House staff who have been exposed here. It's deeply concerning, but they all have a good chance of doing well. Mm-hmm. He was previously in good health by all reports and will get excellent care. The critical question right now is the president or Melania or Hope or other White House staff who may have been exposed symptomatic. That would give us a lot more information about the risks they face. So your question, does the president have risk factors? The answer is unfortunately yes. The president's in a high-risk group simply by virtue of his age. He's 74. He's also reported to be overweight. He has an elevated BMI. There's every reason now to expect that the president will do well in recover. We're all wishing him well, as I said, but the risk is still high because of age alone. So for every 1,000 people in the mid-70s or older who are infected, around 11.6 will succumb to the virus. This is data out of the UK. That's for people 75 and above. Now, if you're below 75, the risk of death is about 3.4%. That's the largest study that's been done looking at risk of death based on age alone. Now, this didn't take into account comorbidities, and the president is reported to be in excellent health. There's some other studies that have been done that showed lower risks. One in Geneva showing that the risk of death was 5.6% for those over the age of 65. Another study in Spain showing 3.4% for those between 70 and 79. So not trivial, but you know, there's every reason to believe the president will do well and will recover. What we need to know right now is whether or not he's symptomatic. If he remains asymptomatic, he can be quarantined in the White House, observed, and hopefully get back to to a schedule in a reasonable course of time. If he becomes symptomatic, it's obviously a longer course at that period. The incubation period for COVID-19 is thought to extend about 14 days with a median time of about 4 to 5 days from exposure to symptom onset. So the president is going to be observed very closely right now.
One reason I said you're a clinician, okay, what do we do right now? Because we've had you on many times. We talked remdesivir, how that, when it's taken, whether it's early or later, what it can, whether it shaves a couple of days off of recovery. Then we went to, there was a steroid that seemed to be better if it was already, maybe there was some type of immune response that was too high. And then there's also a Regeneron antibody cocktail that seems to and there's the convalescent plasma as well. What do you think doctors are doing right now or should be doing right now with the president?
Well, I think they'd probably be considering remdesivir. Remdesivir is indicated for hospitalized patients, but there is thinking that it probably improves outcomes the earlier it's introduced in the course of the disease. And so the question is the president symptomatic now? And so you'd consider remdesivir. Steroids you wouldn't be considering at this point. It's indicated only when patients have sort of the inflammatory response. So after they have the viral response period, the first week of the illness, they become sick. When they start requiring oxygen and they go into that second phase of the virus that we've talked about where they're having an inflammatory response, that's when steroids seem to be most effective. The antibodies could be effective in this setting. There's every theoretical reason to believe that the earlier you would introduce those antibodies, the more benefit you would derive. But the data on those drugs is so early, I doubt the White House is considering that at this point. I think the only thing that the doctors might consider at this point, given that it is the president, given what we have available, might be remdesivir, where there is a belief, there's data demonstrating that it improves outcomes in hospitalized patients, and there's good reason to believe that if you would introduce it early in the course of the disease, it would have the same positive benefit.
Doctor, hoping you could comment on testing, and specifically rapid testing, because I think there's been lots of questions about the quality of rapid testing. I think people are going to look potentially at this news this morning and say to themselves, if the president can get it, anybody can, even in an environment where he is trying, or they had been trying to create this rapid test bubble around themselves where it seemed impervious to COVID. In terms of how this testing is working, do you believe in the quality of the testing? And B, how long do you need to wait now to find out about the quality of tests going forward for everybody that might have been around the president? Because it's very possible, from what I understand, that you could test negative from a quick rapid test or even a PCR test today, but maybe 4, 5, even 10 days later, test positive.
Well, my understanding is that the White House is using the Abbott ID Now machines. I don't know if they've changed that. We've talked before in this show about the sensitivity and specificity of that machine relative to others and using it as a screening tool. The gene expert by Cepheid, and I don't have any relationship to Cepheid, but it's a much more sensitive and specific test and does provide good throughput, not as good as the Abbott ID Now. So, you know, that might be the test. If you're using a test to try to screen an asymptomatic population and you want really good reliability because it's the President of the United States, you might want to introduce a test like the GeneXpert, which is going to give you better sensitivity and specificity. So you might want to rethink the testing protocol. And we've talked about this on this show many times. So the question is, how did Hope Hicks get through that screening process? Because obviously she was getting tested a lot, other people were getting tested a lot, and it's unclear right now. And it's possible that she was tested and they got a false negative with the protocol that they were using.
Dr. Gottlieb, I'm trying to understand how aggressive the contact tracing should be in this case. And I think a lot of workplaces are grappling with this situation. Is there a threshold in terms of exposure to the president at which point people should be notified if they were only in contact for, you know, 5 seconds? I mean, does that qualify for contact tracing or do those people not get notified? How should we understand this?
Yeah, typically the sort of criteria is 15 minutes of exposure, within 6 feet of distance. But I suspect given, where we are right now in the White House setting and the people who could potentially be at risk, they're going to be much more aggressive. They're going to want to protect other White House officials. They're going to want to protect the vice president now. So I suspect they're going to cast a very wide net around staff who may have been exposed to the president. Remember, the people who've been exposed to the president's a relatively small bubble. By every measure that we've been hearing, they've narrowed down the president's direct contacts. And so there probably aren't a lot of people who've been directly exposed to the president. The question is who's been exposed to Hope Hicks and maybe other White House staff who could be incubating this. So I think they're going to cast a very wide net. I wouldn't be surprised if they tested the entire compound today and brought in some different testing equipment so that they can get a more sensitive result.
All right, Dr. Gottlieb, so much to talk about here. When you think about, now we'll move down that, there's all these priorities as we talk about this development. It's very troubling, obviously. And now, to talk about the campaign is secondary, but when do you think any sense of returning to, whether it's a debate or whether it's leaving the White House, I mean, we're talking at least 2 weeks, aren't we? And that's in the best case scenario. And then what would you do? You'd need to be completely virus free, like anybody else who's quarantining, before you'd even consider even stepping out.
I think that's right. They're gonna do serial tests on the president, but he's likely to remain PCR positive, so likely have a positive test for an extended period of time, even if he continues to shed dead virus. I mean, with him, they might culture the virus to see if he has live virus to understand exactly when he seroconverts and clears the virus, if assuming he does well, which we all hope he will and believe he will. But I think you're right. I think you're looking at an extended period right now where the president would probably be quarantined out of an abundance of caution. And I think they also have to follow really strict protocols. And so, it does put at risk his upcoming schedule, even assuming and hoping he does well.
Okay. Thanks for coming on so early. We appreciate
thanks
it.
A lot.
We're going to get back to Eamon Javers, and that is additional news. We've talked about it, referenced it. We're switching gears back, Eamon, but asymptomatic versus symptomatic. Looks like it's not asymptomatic. It looks like there are some cold-like symptoms so far for the president.
Yeah, and a couple of breaking news items. We now have a tweet from Joe Biden. The big question here has been, how will the Biden campaign react to this? Joe Biden saying, Jill and I send our thoughts to President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump for a swift recovery. We will continue to pray for the health and safety of the president and his family. That's the tweet from Joe Biden this morning. No mention there of the former vice president's own virus status or his testing situation. That is something that we'll be looking closely for in the hours to come from the vice president's team. Meanwhile, I've been texting with a person familiar who gives me this information about Treasury Secretary Mnuchin, saying the secretary has spoken to the White House medical office and has been advised that based on his very limited contact with the president, that he does not feel the need to quarantine. Of course, he will continue to be tested daily, I am told, about Treasury Secretary Mnuchin. So Mnuchin not entering quarantine at this point, according to this person familiar, based on his limited contact with folks inside the West Wing. Now to that story from the New York Times. The New York Times is reporting, of course, that there are some symptoms here that are exhibiting themselves when it comes to the president of the United States, saying that these symptoms are mild, according to the New York Times. The president has had what one person described as cold-like symptoms, the Times reports, and saying that at his fundraiser in Bedminster, New Jersey on Thursday, he seemed lethargic. One person says he fell asleep on Air Force One on the way back from a rally in Minnesota on Wednesday night. A White House official said that as of Thursday night, they're still discussing the treatment plan. All of this, according to the New York Times, Maggie Haberman. So a possible national address or a videotaped statement from the president is also under discussion here, Joe. So the president apparently now, according to the New York Times, is experiencing some symptoms. And that answers another question we had when we got that note from the White House physician's office at about 1 a.m. this morning, noting that the president and the first lady are doing well, quote unquote, but not specifying whether the president was symptomatic or asymptomatic. Now, according to the New York Times, we know that the president is symptomatic, has seemed lethargic, has been exhibiting some signs of having an active case here of coronavirus. No indication on just what the treatment plan will be and what the plans are going forward. Guys, back over to you.
start.
Okay, Amy, thank you for that.
Next on Squawk Pod, CNBC's Jim Cramer on the road ahead for Wall Street and beyond after the president's positive diagnosis of COVID-19.
The primary person who has stood in the way of this being tamped is the president of the United States because he doesn't wear a mask. And he makes fun of the vice president for wearing a mask, a big mask. Well, maybe we have to rethink that.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to Squawk Pod from CNBC. It's the first Friday of the month, which means it's Jobs Friday. Today's report from the Department of Labor is the last one before the general election next month. The number of jobs added in September, 661,000. The unemployment rate fell to 7.9% from 8.4% in August. And according to our experts, it was a bit of a letdown, as BlackRock's Kate Moore put it.
This is a slightly disappointing number. We were looking for something closer to a million.
The bottom line, job creation is decelerating. September was the seventh month of economic crisis, and so many jobs were lost this spring that we are still below pre-pandemic levels. The jobs report, important as it is heading into the final weeks of the election season, became more of a backdrop to the other major news of the day, the positive COVID test for the president and first lady, the subsequent testing whirlwind at the White House, and this developing story's implications to what investors are watching every day between now and November 3rd, the chance for further federal stimulus to an uneven economy. Here's Andrew Ross Sorkin.
I want to get straight over to CNBC's headquarters right now where Jim Cramer joins us. There is so much to talk to you about, Jim, obviously the jobs numbers, but let's walk through the implications for the market of what we're hearing right now about President Trump being symptomatic. Apparently now it sounds like he has been symptomatic perhaps for more than 24 hours, given that he was taking public meetings during that period. How do you see this playing out in terms of the politics of it, in terms of the stimulus that's on the table, in terms of the Supreme Court? Put it all in perspective for us.
Well, first, we want to wish the president and first lady well. I know that we have seen many people have recovery fast. Some people obviously hospitalized and the situations are much better, but he's in at-risk age. I think that I'm not saying this much to do about nothing. I am saying that people should have a buy list ready. I don't think that this is going to change things that much. I don't think it's going to change things with the stimulus unless Senator McConnell, who I think has really got all the cards, does something. I think the Senate is convinced, the Republican senators, 20 of them, that we have a V-shaped recovery, so why are we wasting any money? I think, obviously, if you look at the employment report, you'll see that, I mean, there's a staggering number of people who are losing their jobs permanently because the companies are closing. And it was always the idea of the secretary that there should be insurance against that. 19.4 million people reported unable to work. But I don't think the two can be conflated. I just don't think that. And I do believe that the president will be able to do some Zoom and we'll be surprised at how well the Zoom does.
Jim, you know, we're looking at a number of the travel stocks get hit particularly hard. I think on the assumption that there's a view that this is going to make this real for certain Americans and maybe would reduce their willingness to travel, reduce their willingness to spend money. Do you buy that argument?
Not one bit. I think that only 19 people since the period that COVID has started, according to medical sources and Boeing, have contracted COVID from flying in planes, and that's because people wear masks. The president has been quite cynical about mask wearing. I think that this is going to increase mask wearing, which will therefore further the tamping of the virus, not unlike Southeast Asia. So I don't want to say that this sad event is good news for America, but you know, if you wear masks, as people do when they're on planes, it works. 19 people have COVID after millions of people have flown, documented by medical sources. Why? They wear masks on planes. And if you wear a mask, you're protected.
Jim, it's an important point. It may be an unconventional thought, but if there is a positive from this situation, perhaps more Americans will wear masks.
And we appreciate your perspective. The primary person who has stood in the way of this being tamped is the president of the United States because he doesn't wear a mask and he makes fun of the vice president for wearing a mask, a big mask. Well, maybe we have to rethink that. Maybe the Tennessee Titans have to rethink that. Maybe the country has to rethink that. So, yes, maybe something good could come of it, which is that every scientist, every epidemiologist, every person who understands aerosol, all agree that masks are the only hope we really have, particularly indoors. So maybe that changes. And maybe the notion that you're somehow not tough enough to wear a mask goes away.
Jim, we appreciate it. And you're 100% right. So thank you.
Squawk Pod. We'll be right back. That's Squawk Pod for today and for another week. Thanks for listening. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 a.m. Eastern and subscribe to Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. Let us know what you think of the pod. Tweet us at Squawk CNBC or leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. All of that helps. We'll meet you back here on Monday. Have a good weekend.